from the vault. High atop the pastoral center of the Diocese of Camden, you're listening to Talking Catholic.
Thanks again, Father Robert Sinatra, for that wonderful intro. Pete Sanchez with the Catholic Star Herald, and I'm with Mike Walsh. Mike, how are you?
I'm very good today, sir. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. We're here in June, and this is the first recording in June, I believe.
I think you're right. This is the first recording.
And it's a new month, a lot of cool things coming up. What do you think of when you think of June, Mike?
Graduation and getting out of school.
Yes. And after people get out of school, where do they usually go?
I usually went to work. However, I think the cool people get to go down the shore.
Exactly. And actually, if you're going down the shore, this summer there are, you'll find masses in parishes located throughout the beautiful South Jersey region. Parishes in Atlantic City, Wildwood, Avalon, Ocean City. And what's neat, many parishes added the Mass times to their schedules to accommodate you great visitors. So please support our parishes. And for all of the parish summer Mass schedules, you can go to CatholicStarHerald.org or CamdenDiocese.org to find that information. And if you get the Star Herald every week, there is a summer Mass schedule published.
And if you don't get the Star Herald, get the Star Herald.
Yes,
we
please
get wonderful it. Subscription rates, and oftentimes it's available for free in your local parish.
Yes, thanks, Mike. And we have coming up on June 17th, this weekend, there's a few Corpus Christi solemn outdoor processions. We have just to celebrate the body and the feast of the body and blood of Christ. The first one will be June 17th. I believe that's a Saturday. 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. at St. Pete's in Merchantville, 5 p.m. Mass, followed by the outdoor procession with triple benediction of the Most Blessed Sacrament. Triple benediction, I don't think I've ever heard that term, actually.
I'd expect nothing less from Father Byerly than a triple benediction.
When we get to it, we'll have to ask our guest what triple benediction is.
Okay.
But hold on, folks. We'll get to him. On June 18th, the next day, at Our Lady of Perpetual Help in Egg Harbor City, St. Nicholas Church, they will be having their Corpus Christi procession following the 8:45 Mass, 8:45 a.m. Mass. For the one at St. Pete's Merchantville, call 856-663-1373. Or if you're close to Egg Harbor City and want to attend Sunday morning, call the parish office, 609-652-0008. Both are going to be awesome. Mike, there's another thing coming up in the next couple of weeks, the Diocesan Wedding Anniversary Mass.
Yes.
That's going to be awesome. Bishop Sullivan will be there.
That's for people at what anniversary stage?
It's going to be for those celebrating 25, 50, 60, 70 or more years of blissful.
All right.
Bliss.
I got another 7 years of bliss before I get to go.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations. That will be Sunday, June 18th at 3 p.m. at Mary Mother Mercy Parish, 500 Greentree Road in Glassboro. So go check it out. Be there just to celebrate. Even if you don't have one of those wedding anniversaries, Mike, you can go. You can celebrate. You can, you know.
I think I might, actually. It's in my hometown.
Yeah, you can probably walk there with your wife.
Yeah, but then we'll be all sweaty. I think I'll just drive.
Well, yeah, they were talking about a heat wave. And going from marriage to youth ministry now, we have, that's an awkward transition, but the Summer in the City is coming up week-long. It's every year. It's awesome. Do you know the Summer in the City, right, Mike?
I do know the Summer in the City.
It's a week-long immersion project, and each youth participant, given, you know, they can live, work the gospel of service and social justice through the pillars of service, spirituality, community, and social justice.
It's really a great opportunity for young people, particularly who are very social justice motivated. You really get a first-person account of what a lot of our ministries in the diocese, you know, the help that are able to provide people who are in need, maybe not even grave need, but in in need of something. So it's a good opportunity if you have that kind of personality, or if you've ever been interested in it, or you have somebody in your family you think might be a good choice. I think this year they're being held in Vineland and in Atlantic City, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, they're really wonderful. Good accommodations, good people, and yeah. every young person I've spoken with who's taken part in the summer in the city was really moved by what they took part in, and all have very, you know, cherished memories.
And I agree. I've been lucky enough to cover, to go down and interview these kids, and it's such a transformative experience for everybody. Not only the people, the youth participating, but the people they help, the homeless, or they go to senior centers, senior residences, and they just spend time with these elderly and hear their stories and just figure, you know, it's just really beautiful. So as Mike said, there's two locations this summer. They're open to any student who is in high school in 2017. You don't have to be a service veteran. You can just come up. You know, if you've never done it before, sign up. Registration is on a first-come, first-served basis. And the next one, the first week is June 25th to June 30th this month at Pope John Paul II Retreat House in Vineland. And later in August, there's one in Holy Spirit High School in Absecon, August 13th through the 19th. Registration fee is $150. It covers meals. You have lodging. You get a place to stay and program materials. And this might be interesting for high school, for those in high schools. Well, obviously, everybody on this is a high schooler. You can use this experience for service hours. That's very exciting. So just come out. It's going to be a great time. Good summer in the city. Call Greg Coogan, Director of Youth and Young Adult Ministry, at 856-583-2908 or visit www.camdendiocese.org. So, and then, you know what we have coming on June 30th, Mike?
What do we have coming on June 30th?
Well, it's something I actually went really, I did this a few years ago. I recommend this to everybody just to see this. There's a 7th annual mass of welcome and reception for the Haitian farm workers in Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really neat. Every year, these workers, these Haitian workers and their families, they travel north from Florida and they come up to harvest blueberries during this month and July. And they live in housing on blueberry farms in Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And they call Hamilton the blueberry capital of the country, at least, not mm-hmm. the world. And these are the individuals, these Haitian farm workers, are the ones making that happen. And it's just a really beautiful, I was there on a hot June day about 3 or 4 years ago. Really neat. I interviewed some of them, some of these individuals and their families. It's just really, to not only come together, but to really celebrate their hard work and what they've done. And the mass is going to be 6 p.m. Friday, June 30th at Columbia Fruit Farms, 528 Middle Road in Hamilton. And the you can find directions, camdendiocese.org, and then look for the Black Catholic Ministry link. And the celebrant and homilist will be Father Yvonne Jazon, who the mass will be celebrated in Haitian Creole and English. And then they're actually looking for donations, too. So you can come bring non-perishable beverages, bottled water, box juices, fruit drinks for their farm workers, you know, so they have that as they labor under the hot sun during these next few months. And more info, contact James Andrews, Mike, if you want to go, Director of the Office of Black Catholic Ministry and Cultural mm-hmm. Diversity. And his number is 856-583-2907. And I really hope you're there, Mike. I think that's going to be great.
You know, the farm masses, they happen in a couple of different ministries within the diocese, and they really are something to behold if you get a chance to go to one. I've always enjoyed a good outdoor mass to begin with, and when you're there for one of the farm worker masses, I don't know, there's just something particularly touching and moving about the experience. So yeah. I do hope, if this is going to be nearby to you, I hope you'll take advantage of it.
And I think so, and like I said, really just to appreciate these individuals who are working to provide a living for their families. And
to provide food for us.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, these are members of our community, even if it tends to be migrant workers in South Jersey. So these are people who come in and come out. But while they're here, they're part of the family. They're part of our family. So we should go out and support them the way they're supporting us.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I'm allergic to blueberries, so apparently they're all secretly trying to kill me. But other than that,
I think
we're fine.
I think you should stay far away then.
So long as they don't throw blueberries at me, I'll be fine.
Blow up like a blueberry.
And Jersey blueberries are so good, particularly the ones in Hamilton. So people always tell me how great they are, but can't even.
Oh, maybe we could get like a pill or a shot or something before. I don't know. Like an anti-allergy shot? I don't know.
Nah, I'm okay. But, you know, they still have things like strawberries and apples and peaches, so I'm good on the fruit category. I don't need to go down that road.
I think you're definitely serving your purgatory here in that regard.
Thank you.
Blueberries. Oh, I love them. They're delicious. And coming up, August 15th, actually, is the Mass of the Assumption of Mary. Celebrate the Assumption. That will be held in a few locations, Atlantic City, Stone Harbor, and Wildwood. It's really cool. Come up. Bishop Sullivan will be there. And if you go to Wedding of the Sea in Atlantic City, that will be at Boardwalk Hall. Bishop Sullivan will celebrate a Mass of the Assumption and then throw a traditional wreath toss, do the traditional wreath toss into the sea. So go to www.accatholic.org. For that, and Mike, I think we are ready to introduce our guest.
You know, as you were sitting here, I was thinking to myself, you know, people think the summertime and there's nothing going on. Man, that was our longest intro that we've ever done. So for those of you who like the intros, you're welcome, one of you. For those of you who can't wait to get past the intro so we can get to the interview, sorry. But there really is a lot of stuff going on in the diocese this summer, and actually we're rather proud of that.
We are.
And one of the people who will be taking part in one of those things is with us today.
Yes.
Who is that, Pete?
Well, we have here I call him a Renaissance man. He just seems to have a lot of different things. I mean, I've known Steve Obarski, director of Worship and Christian Initiation for the Diocese of Canada. I've known him for a number of years, ever since I started. And he's kind of he's just got I always want to pick his brain. He just always has so much knowledge and about anything and everything, movies, liturgy, of course, the nice beverage at sometimes.
See, for me, he is one of the two snappiest dressers in the diocese. He really does a good job. You want to know if you're in a mass, particularly one of these diocesan masses, and you're wondering who the snappiest dresser is, it's him.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Father Joe Wiles is there, but he's usually investment, so you won't notice. But he's another snappy dresser.
Well, he's the snappiest layman we have.
There you go. There
That's
you go.
So Steve, how are you today?
Doing well, Pete. Yourself?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on.
More importantly, thank you for waiting 13 minutes before we introduced you. We apologize for that.
Rarely am I quiet.
You are our most patient guest we've ever had. Things have been, we're winding down you were at present at the ordinations that we recently.
I was. And involved.
And involved. And speak about that. What was your experience with the transitional diaconate ordination and the priest ordination?
Before we go to ordinations, Pete, just so we don't lose track of details, you raised a question early on when you were talking about the Feast of Corpus Christi and the processions.
Yes.
And what is a triple benediction?
Thank you.
So, the outdoor processions for Corpus Christi are a long-standing custom, probably going back to the 11th or 12th centuries. And what they are is a devotion that shows the presence of Christ not only in the church, but also the presence of Christ in the world. So by bringing Christ and the Blessed Sacrament from the church into a public area, we're professing our faith in the presence of Christ, but we're also evangelizing whoever happens to witness the procession to something that is very different and unique, and possibly raising in some minds the desire to ask, you know, what is this all about? So in the course of the procession, there are usually two or three altars that are set up along the route. They could be as simple as as a pedestal or as elaborate as an altar with candles and fabric and everything else to make it nice. But the procession pauses at each of them. The Blessed Sacrament is left on the altar. There may be some prayers, some hymns, and then before moving on to the next altar, the priest lifts the monstrance, making the sign of the cross over those in the procession, so that, that act of blessing the people with the Eucharist is referred to as a benediction. So the benediction in the course of the procession is done three times. So that is a triple benediction.
Wow. I think you just maybe want to go more now. Well, the understanding. Well, I mean, that sounds beautiful.
Well, good. And it is. It truly is. It's work putting the procession together and making it happen in a non-chaotic manner, but it's it's well worth it for those who participate.
And our, continue.
In my Kansas City years, we had a diocesan procession that actually usually took place either in downtown Kansas City, Missouri, or downtown St. Joseph, Missouri, where we began at one church and ended at another, you know, with some intermediate stops. And, you know, it was actually, you know, the June equivalent of the St. Patrick's Day parade, you know, in that, you know, not only were there people in the procession, there were people observing the procession.
Wow. So that's coming up in a few weeks.
And that's really, you know, before we get, you know, before we go back to the ordinations, that's really one of the things about Steve's position is that, you know, these, you know, we oftentimes will see the masses, you know, we'll go to these masses. Some of them are more intricate than others. Well, Steve happens to be the guy that we all go to for the answers to the question of, what's going on? Why is it the way it is? What? So I guess really what, like, how did you kind of go down this path of becoming the go-to guy for answering all of life's liturgical questions?
From the time I was in grade school, Mike, I was involved in the liturgy as an altar server or as a musician. And in order to do those roles capably, you really did need to know what was going on, you know, and why certain things would be happening at certain times. The parish where I grew up was Annunciation in Balmar, and the founding pastor there was an ex-military chaplain who directed servers like a drill sergeant. So while there was a certain level of fear, there was a certain beauty and precision to what we did. And you know, the same went, I had a wonderful music teacher in Annunciation School, who happily is still alive, Sister Barbara Bamberger. And Sister is serving as a music therapist at Camilla Hall. But Sister was a young sister at that time, and you know, full of adventure. And we tried some things musically that were very forward-looking, that sort of set me on the path. Mm-hmm. And one of the degrees eventually that I saw it was a master's in liturgy. So you get the whole, you know, theological formation with a whole sense of how is this theology embodied and expressed in our worship.
Which goes back to one of the things that I always find beautiful at the masses, particularly ordination, which is, for lack of better phrasing, the pomp and circumstance of what we see. There's a majesty to seeing what's represented in the manner in which it's represented and the rubrics that are used to represent it in the Mass. I mean, we think of, you know, faith and love and God and whatnot, but there really is a sense of when you walk into a church and you see this, see what's happening laid out in the manner in which it was laid out. One of the questions I've often asked under Pope Benedict, there were a lot of changes to the liturgy, some rather notable changes to the liturgy. How did that affect you? Did that turn your world upside down, or was that not as difficult as it was for the rest of us who weren't quite used to it?
The changes under Pope Benedict were actually in the works from the period of time of Pope St. John Paul II. And the ones that we noticed the most were the ones that were with the way the texts were delivered.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, you know, I found that some of the texts that may seem to cause us to stumble when we say them are actually a little bit more singable.
Oh, really?
You know, so that you can sometimes sort of catch the grammar if a priest or bishop or deacon is singing the text well.
Yeah.
Things just sort of land out a whole lot better. Among the changes were perhaps more explicit interpretation of the rubrics or the directions. They weren't necessarily changes, but they were, this is what you're going to do, and this is how you're going to do it. So it simply was, if you will, course correction rather than wholesale change.
Yeah. Okay. And as far as the sort of the masses in the diocese, about how far in advance will you start? For instance, let's pick one out. Let's say the Chrism Mass. How far in advance do you start planning, you know, next year's Chrism Mass?
Mike, you have chosen probably the most complex and detail-rich of any of the liturgies that we do. And in fact, we're starting preparation for next year's Chrism Mass, not necessarily the Mass part that you see in the church, but every year parishes will return the bottles that had housed their previous year's oils to us, and they have to be cleaned and stored, and that's what we use summer for.
Oh my gosh.
You know, is that. And then things really start in earnest right after Ash Wednesday, when we send out to parishes the forms that they need to request the holy oil so we know what quantities to purchase. We go through and decide what music is going to be retained from the previous year, where we may need to make a change. You know, and it may sound lazy to say that, you know, we're doing some stuff from year to year, but when you consider that the ritual by its very nature requires repetition in order for it to become familiar, we usually only change out one or two things musically. Sometimes if the church is having something like Year of Mercy or Year of Faith, there's often a universal hymn or a national hymn that's used. So we'll try to include that in the repertoire. This year, the church isn't celebrating a universal something, but we chose a hymn called Laudato Si that promotes the contents of Pope Francis's encyclical on the environment. So somewhere or another, we try in our liturgies to express not only who we are as the Diocese of Camden, but who we are as part of a universal church.
Okay. And, you know, over the course of the year, you've done all the major masses in the, as a matter of fact, I would say beyond Bishop himself and his assistant Father Romano, you're probably the hardest working, particularly during Lent, probably the hardest working guy in the diocese. Make it to a lot of events. What is it like? Is there a particular mass liturgy that you're particularly fond of?
Surprisingly, I don't necessarily have a favorite because each one brings its own, you know, particularly wonderful moment, and I don't know in advance what that wonderful moment's going to be. You know, last night we had a minor ceremony at Holy Family where we had men who were in formation for the permanent diaconate. Some were being elevated to the ministry of acolyte. And we had one gentleman who was admitted to the ministry of leader. And simply at the beginning of the opening hymn, hearing robust, full-throated singing from a congregation of 200, you know, suddenly that mass was my new favorite. You know, and in others, it may simply, you know, be, you know, how for the rite of election, We usually get everybody who is acknowledged by the bishop who's preparing for baptism arrayed in the sanctuary at Our Lady of Hope, mm-hmm. so that we visually see 150 to 200 unbaptized people who in 6 weeks will be members of the body of Christ through baptism. And that is, you know, that is a favorite moment mm-hmm. as well. And that, by the way, was a Bishop Sullivan idea. And one of the other delights of my job is, you know, the bishop will say, well, I think I'd like this to happen. But it's my job to figure out how will it happen so that it is beautiful, not confusing, and not chaotic.
Yeah.
You know, and I happen to like being a problem solver. So
well, that's, you know, for me as the guy who's usually running around handling media or taking photographs or keeping things in order, what I've loved about the masses that I've attended, particularly the bishop's masses that I've attended, and I give Father Romano a lot of credit for this as well, they are expertly run from the beginning to end. Now, I know, as having been an events coordinator for many years, you know, I know what goes into it that nobody sees behind those walls, and, you know, famous phrase, nobody likes to see how the sausage is made, mm-hmm. but they all like to taste it. That's how a lot of this is. Have you found that over the years that the amount of hair pulling has lessened as you've gotten sort of into the role of your job? Or do you find that there's always new ways of pulling your hair out?
The latter. there are always surprises. I'm wired by nature, to go immediately to the, gee, that's a good idea, what could possibly go wrong, and figure out what could possibly go wrong before watching it become embodied. But getting enough people involved in simple parts of mm-hmm. the liturgy, mm-hmm. you know, just having people come to put labels on pews so that you know that the things are reserved. Folks greeting people in a friendly manner and helping them to find a place in the church. Yeah. You know, perhaps having folks who know how processions are going to go and can sort of help that move along. None of the tasks are large or complex. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Pete has been one of our bell ringers for the yep. tower of the cathedral. I mean, it's. He knows that it's not rocket science, but it helps when it happens at the right time.
Yes. And it does add to the beauty. It's another of these elements that adds to the beauty of the Mass. You may not need to do it, but it's a wonderful opportunity to be able to do it. Even more wonderful opportunity for it to be actual bells. Yeah. I know you've said to both Pete and I, because I was one of your bell ringers once as well, that you liked having the communications people yanking on the bells, because that is one of the original, original, but that was one of the main, original matters, ways you did a mass communication was through the ringing of the bells. So that gave me chills when you said that to me the first time. I was like, oh man, I feel cool doing this. Yeah. And then I nearly had the bells rip my arm out of this shocking, because they are not light.
No, they're not. and the rope is quite stout. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a great experience. I'd like to do it again sometime.
Yeah, I think. I don't think we mentioned this. You also play the piano during the masses too. I always see, I mean, it's such a, like Mike was saying, it's so much, such a well-oiled machine. So you've had, you've had it's like a there and back again. You were here and then you were out of the diocese and now you're back. So can you take us from the beginning? When did you first start working for the Diocese of Camden?
I started working for the diocese in 1983. At that time, it was looking to be able to have some consistency in how diocesan ceremonies were run, because prior to that time, the diocesan ceremonies ran sort of on a rent-a-choir basis. Yeah. You know, where certain parishes were asked to send their choir to do a ceremony for the diocese. So coming off of the experience of diocesan pilgrimages to Washington, D.C., where there was a choir made of people from many different parishes, you know, there was the impulse to try and keep that sort of a musical entity going for local things. And of course, you know, in those early years, you know, in addition to coordinating that, you know, we had the installation for Bishop McHugh. We had the 50th anniversary of the Diocese of Camden, which you know, was a highly musical event kind of a year. So you know, there were things to be done, and you know, the move out to the Midwest was definitely a good time for both my wife and myself. We are a two liturgist household, two musician household. So I had the opportunity to make more use of the non-musician side in Kansas City. You know, to do the things that the liturgy degree and other experiences prepared me for. And during those years, the diocese was responding to the projection that there would be so many fewer priests that there would be parishes where there would only be a single mass on a weekend. So a number of places were being asked to build larger churches. So I had the opportunity to be the bishop's rep on these various building projects. So I learned a whole lot about, you know, the building process, the way architects think, you know, plus, you know, the opportunity to learn more about sound system engineering and those sorts of things. And when Monsignor Burton called me in 2008 and asked if I would consider coming back, you know, I was at that point feeling, you know, actually, I think I, in prayer, I said to God, well, I feel as though there's one more challenge left in me, you know, what's it going to be? You know, and shortly thereafter, Monsignor Burton called, and it was a diocese in the midst of all the mergers. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of the skills that I had as far as working with contention in building processes brought me back to be able to shepherd folks through the contention of parish mergers, at least from the liturgical aspect.
Yeah.
And you've been director of worship since then? I think you came back to...
I've been working for between Kansas City and here. I've been in a diocesan office for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I always try and do some things in a parish as well, just to keep myself grounded, to keep myself from being the stereotypical clueless diocesan functionary.
So and you keep yourself in both worlds. So to speak.
You know, I'm sorry. You had mentioned the mergers recently, and I wanted to sort of tie in. You are a man that wears at least two hats. One of your other major hats happens to be the archive of the diocese, which you were good enough to give me a tour of. You and your left hand and my left hand, John Kalitz, were good enough to give me a tour of when I first came to the diocese a little over a year ago. And a lot of what's in there is because of the mergers. Simply, you know, a merger of two or more parishes happen. What eventually happens is usually the parish then downsizes. This newly formed parish downsizes its physical plant. There's usually a church sold off or some property sold off, but the relics that are in it, you know, we keep and we find a way to repurpose, or the parish keeps and finds a way to repurpose. So can you tell me a little bit about the archive and that part of your job, which actually surprisingly falls hand in hand with the liturgy in a lot of ways. You are
absolutely,
yeah, you are the perfect person for that position.
And John and I pretty much, I think we share the same hat. Mm-hmm. Which may sound disgusting, but it actually...
John's very clear.
Excuse me. But in practice, it actually works quite well. Mm-hmm. The goal of having an archival storage is to make sure that the things that people have given for the church to use are treated with as much respect as possible, and where possible, not only the items are preserved for future use, but where we can, also the memorial, the memory of who certain things were donated for, we try to preserve as well. So, you know, we have, you know, Eucharistic vessels, chalices, ciboria. We have some tabernacles. Many parishes, we actually have a waiting list for some parishes looking for large crucifixes. So we will probably not ever have a crucifix in storage for more than a day or two. You know, and we also have a supply of vestments, both that were given to us by parishes or that are truly historical, that date back to Bishop Eustace, who was the first bishop of Camden. One of the ways that, that John and I have a collaborative, cooperative, complementary relationship, I can look at something and pretty much know what it is, you know, which is in answer to John's, what's this? and can often tell, you know, just looking at it, whether it's something that was mass-produced or produced, you know, hand craftsmanship, you know, which sort of helps just in establishing the value of a thing. And, you know, in addition to storing and trying to rehome these artifacts, we do sometimes get things from parishes that are beyond use or beyond repair. So every year there's a box or two of things that goes to a Catholic cemetery for respectful burial. You know, they have, the vessels have served their purpose and, you know, are now buried. The genius that John brings to the enterprise is that, you know, once we have things identified, he'll assign them a catalog tag number, photograph them, and with the permission of the diocesan chancellor, Father Bartoloma, folks can go on the website, you know, from parish churches and, you know, see what it is that, that they may want for their parish. We do on occasion have some of our international priests ask if they can take some things back, you know, when they go back for summer vacation for use in mission churches in their country. And I think after the last disaster in Haiti, we had a box or two shipped down there. So, you know, some of our things don't necessarily stay in the diocese, but they go, you know, the high value is placed on them being continued to be used for a sacred purpose.
Right. The last thing anybody wants is for this to be sitting in a in an archive somewhere. It was always designed to be used, and it should be used. The archive itself, the where we keep everything, is you go in there. It is actually lovely to look at. Is at some point, if there were ever need of a diocesan museum, I think we'd have the artifacts at least put together a pretty good display. Once again, not what we want, because we want these things to be in use, but quite nice. And I will say that you and John and the parishes and everyone who's involved, very respectful to these relics that have been in the diocese for 20, 40, 50, 75, 80 years. We're celebrating our 80th anniversary this year, as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken. None of us are that old in this room, so it's okay.
Thankful.
We'll get there, but not yet. You know, just going back to the, you know, something you had said earlier about the liturgy, while you may not have a favorite mass or liturgy, so what happens when you get something that does come out of left field? You know, it's a new year. We had the, for instance, we had the Holy Year last year, and we needed some door opening ceremonies. We needed things like that. You know, as soon as you find out about something that's coming new, something that's a one-off or a rarely seen, how quickly do you start planning for it?
As soon as the bishop's calendar shows that there's going to be the bishop's participation in something, or that there is an explicit request from a parish, you know, for advice, a lot of times what I'm able to do is to just point folks in the direction of what the church has already provided. You know, the Book of Blessings is an amazingly rich resource. And in fact, when we did the door openings, because in our area, part of the world, it was winter. Mm-hmm. So we really didn't want folks standing outside for long periods of time. We sort of did an adaptation between what was being done in Rome and what is in the Book of Blessings for the blessing of a church door,
yeah,
which managed to, you know, to get all of the necessary elements there,
mm-hmm,
but didn't really keep people outside in the winter wind for very long.
Well, thank you for that. As the guy standing outside getting everyone's photograph, I appreciate the fact that I wasn't out there for too long.
You are most welcome.
Thank you. But long enough that I will say that that was some of my favorite photographs that I've taken have actually been for the door openings, both of the crowds outside or when bishop or the priest would open the door himself. It looked beautiful. I find that, Pete, you might agree with this, that that the liturgies tend to be photographic rich opportunities. I've taken plenty of bad photographs, but that's on me, not because of the setup. Some of the prettiest photos I've ever taken, I will say, have been inside of a church.
And I agree. I think it's just the first off you walk into. I love the empty churches. You see the stained glass.
Mm.
You know, that's beautiful. The architecture, what you were saying. But then to have, like, the Rite of Election is one of my favorite liturgies. The first time I was there, it was just like, this is beautiful. And then the ordination was something, too. Everyone has their own, like Mike used the word, majesty. It's just, you see all of that. And so many, Mike, you took great photos at the ordination.
That's true.
And glad you were practicing humility. Such good virtue. Steve, with your seen it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We've all seen it. Different. We've all been to the different churches, and the liturgies in Merchantville are different from the liturgies in Camden, which are different from the liturgies in Atlantic City, which are different from the liturgies in Cherry Hill. With your work, preparing these liturgies for different, in some cases, funeral masses, you're a part of, is it a challenge trying to accommodate these, they're just different hymns, different, what the pastors might, or what the family wants, like Hispanic. There was a funeral presentation, a funeral workshop where they talked about how to accommodate Hispanics, how do you accommodate, the cultural differences?
The wonderful thing is that, although you said, the liturgies are different, at their very core,
they're not.
They are very much the same. So, to be a good servant of God's people in that particular assembly at that particular time, I wind up needing to ask folks, what's the custom? We'll say clergy funeral as we're trying to put that together. What is it that you know? What is it that you think the people are likely to sing? And then on top of that, I come in with what the bishop's expectations might be if he's the principal celebrant. And, really just look at who's gathered, so that music that you experience at an ordination where there are 70 deacons and 112 priests,
mm-hmm,
we can do some things that might be ever so slightly beyond what would be done in a parish because this congregation can do it.
Yeah.
For the rite of election, we try to stay as simple as possible, because at least a third of the church aren't Catholic yet.
Exactly.
So that their exposure to liturgical music is very much parish conditioned, and they really haven't had a whole lot of experience of it. So really, it's not all that difficult. And trying to figure out, again, knowing who the people are going to be there will be a little bit higher with bilingual music at rite of election, because about a third of the people who are coming in are Spanish speakers, and many of them are only marginally bilingual.
Yeah.
You know, so, but we don't necessarily have that same consideration for Prism Mass, and even for the upcoming wedding anniversary celebration. Our Faith and Family Life Office sent out the registration forms, and on one side they were in English, on the other side they were in Spanish, and we can usually gauge from which side of the page is used, you know, how many Spanish speakers we're going to have. This year, not a single.
Mm-hmm.
You know, registration came back on the Spanish side, so we know that, you know, on that Sunday it will mostly be English-speaking or bilingual folks who, you know, registered in English.
Yeah.
And speaking too about the Spanish and the English, what I love too at these celebrations, you have the responses in English, Spanish, not only in English, Spanish, but say like Filipino or Vietnamese. So you make those accommodations as well. It's really something to, you know, to me at least, it brings, you know, the universality. And there are so many, are just so. It's just it's culturally rich, and it's nice to see.
You know, you were mentioning before about sort of being prepared about what you have to do. You know, speaking, you know, we've talked about the ordinations a couple of times. You handled deftly the diaconate ordination this year when the power went out before the Mass and during the Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Were you the one that brought the generator, or did you...
The parish was way more upset about this than I was.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, because I knew that we could do the ordination without power because we had access to a piano that was a regular piano, not a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a pitch source, and we could do what we did. You know, so it's... The key is to come to the enterprise as prepared as possible, and somehow or another in that preparation, if you have to do something that you had not anticipated, it's not all that much a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, it's just really the first thing you have to handle in the case of the lack of power at the ordination is the anxiety of the other people around you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just assure them that, well, we will be just fine. You know, we'll figure out how to make this happen. And God willing, it'll look like we planned it this way.
Every event manager I ever worked with before I became an event manager, that was always the same thing. We'll be fine. We'll deal with this. Everything will be okay. Keep calm, everyone.
Maybe the lesson is to always just have a conventional piano instead of the keyboard there. I mean, pretty is that. Do you try to do that? I mean, I don't think I've seen you on the keyboard too many times.
And for the most part, that was a first for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having, you know, a storm that provoked a power failure, you know, as we were approaching a ceremony. So I don't know that we would necessarily choose to have a ceremony in a particular place. Based on, you know, whether the piano is electric or acoustic, you know, or what the organ is. You know, although there have been times when I've said to people who are considering locations, the instruments there really are not quite, they were state of the art 30 years ago, but no longer.
Yeah, I mean, that's another good point, because in order to evangelize, you don't know who you're going to get into church. You might get somebody going to the church for the first time or hasn't been there in 20 years. So you do want to effective evangelization. Is that something where you go in there to these places where you are going to play? Do you have to make sure it's in tune, kind of check out the...
Usually parishes are monumentally hospitable. You know, they are delighted to have been asked to host a ceremony. You know, the fact that the invitation comes from the bishop's office rather than the worship office is an indication that the bishop really trusts the folks there to do a good job. I may stop and visit if I'm not familiar with a place, and there may be... I'll never say to a parish, you must get this piano tuned, although I will perhaps come around to the back door and say, so did you have this piano tuned right before Easter? You know, and if that didn't happen, it's on them to say, oh my goodness, no, we didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, because they really do want to be hospitable, it works well.
Getting to music, how have you seen the role of music in the church change since you started in 1983? For me myself, there have been those songs, those hymns. They are catchy, but not all of them. And the ones that I love really hit me on a deeper spiritual level. They get to my soul, and it stays with me for weeks, for months, for years. I mean, have you? Do you see that? Could you just speak about the evolution of liturgical music in your work? Has there been an evolution?
And how many more hours do we have? Briefly, when I started in 1983, we were really just about 13 years into music being an expected part of liturgy. You know, we were coming off of the years and years of people being passive participants or at best making verbal responses. So it's been a matter of watching, if you will, an evolution of musical product, you know, things that the composers are doing that they think will add beauty or splendor to the Mass, watching a number of things that might have been good ideas, but in practice worked out not to be, you know, and respectfully setting them aside, and just trying to figure out how to make it so that the primary music maker at church is really supposed to be the assembly. You know, so Pete alluded to, you know, my being an organist or a pianist, but my focus on that instrument is really using that instrument to play the congregation, yeah, to animate them, to get them excited about singing, to make their experience of singing something that will move them more deeply into the liturgy and not necessarily into a, oh my God, what did he just play? Why are we doing this sort of a mode? So it's using the musical skill to point beyond the musician to the mystery.
And you're talking about that mystery, the to lead the congregation, because it is, we're all, every time we get together, it's a sacrifice of the Passion. We're all with the communion of saints. So it's always something, it's a piece of heaven, mm-hmm, so to speak, every liturgy. And I think and I totally lost my train of thought.
Well, you know what? Actually, that's a good time because we are at the time when we need to start wrapping up. I don't know if you've listened through any of the previous podcasts, but at the end of every podcast, we asked our listener three questions. I have no idea what these questions are going to be. All I know is they don't involve math.
That's good.
Which we haven't yet.
I will freeze. I promise you, I will freeze.
I was just going to say quickly, the Last Supper the apostles sang, and I have never thought about it like that, but somebody said, I guess they did. I guess Jesus, I don't think Jesus is a singer, but so the first three, well, the only three questions I have. Steve, what is your favorite liturgical hymn?
O God Beyond All Praising.
Why?
Because it captures in it the theology of our being together for worship, joining with Christ the priest in offering the sacrifice of praise to the Father. The text is monumentally well-crafted, and the music is an excerpt from Gustav Holst's Jupiter Suite. And it is just stunning. both my wife, and it's my wife's favorite as well. It's sort of goes into the funeral plans as, if you do nothing else, do this before we get started.
That's beautiful.
The second question, do you have, we've gone out a few times and we've had a spirited beverage, and I actually owe you a drink from the last time when I apologize. I
stood me up.
I did. Well, I will explain that. I apologize for that. So I owe you a beverage. What beverage should, when we meet up, what beverage, what's your favorite beverage? What should I get you?
Definitely a dark and nasty craft beer, perhaps with some burnt barrel overtones and definitely some little coffee overtones in it. Beer and coffee are my two favorite things, and to have them in a single libation, nirvana.
Okay. Now remember, there are a few good breweries around here. So you like a good drink, Mike.
I'm a fan of a good drink, sure. Okay. I'll tell you, the nastiest, you're just saying that. Back in the mid-1900s when I was a, or 1990s when I was a reporter, 1990s when I was a reporter, the craft beer phase was just sort of reemerging, and one of the first, I had to road test a bunch of beers, and the one that I will still remember till this day is one of the toughest beers I've ever had to drink, but it was intentionally that, so it was referred to as Alamony Ale, and the crafter said he wanted it to be as painful as his divorce, and we called it Alamony Ale. I remember it for both the name and the whew, that was a rough beer to drink.
Definitely not a party on the
No. But certainly someone who would understand the divorce, I guess.
It's not a party, and you know, it's the best beverage I think is one where there's a party in my mouth. Everyone's invited, you know.
There you go.
It's Steve. One of the things I like to do, and I'm assuming my co-host does as well. I love doing this show. I love getting inspiration from the people we talk to. I know I don't have it all figured out. What do you think, Mike?
You definitely don't have it all figured out.
No. Thank you for agreeing with me. I always try to glean a piece of life advice from our guests. Do you have any advice for us and for our listeners, you know, a quote or a story or you could instill to us wise words?
Probably, you know, given that I'm Catholic school educated from grade school through grad school, and the beneficiary of like the wisdom of the various different religious communities, the whole notion of finding God in all things, you know, and oftentimes my first response when things come up is, "Oh, expletive," and after. After things settle a little bit, you know, to take it to prayer and figure out where God is in that, what God is saying to me in that, and, you know, what that means. So a lot of times I will say to people jokingly but seriously, not all of the impulses of the Holy Spirit are warm fuzzies. So there are times when there will be something that is adverse, unpleasant, or worse. You know, but God is in the moment there. God is communicating Himself, and it's for us to try and figure out where God is. And what that means for what I'm called to do or what I'm called to be.
That's wise words, especially right after the Feast of Pentecost. Mm-hmm. Right now. I mean, that's just... Well, Steve, thank you so much for your time. You're always welcome here. Just keep up the great work. And I know I'll see you at the next event. or in the halls. So, Mike, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Pete. Thanks, Steve. We really appreciate it. And thanks, listeners, for listening in. And don't forget, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and you can
SoundCloud,
and you can always get a hold of us via Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. So feel free to. And one of these days, we'll have to do a live event as well, so that the listeners can come out and egg us.
I think or tomato us.
Whatever, or beer us. That's fine too.
Yeah, that actually would be kind of fun.
Okay, that
and if you egg us, I love scrambled eggs. By the way,
good.
So please, thank you. But thanks again, Mike. Thanks again, Steve. Everybody. Have a great weekend. We've been talking Catholics.